Okay, it's Monday, and it's time for Mitchell Henderson, who is watching and hoping that all of you are taking this deadly situation extremely seriously and are able to do something to try to prepare to be without, because that does appear to be what's in the cards for virtually everyone, except the upper class of scum. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, tonight I want to kind of tell people about America's suicidal grand strategy. If you understand our grand strategy, you'll understand why we're headed for war and destruction, okay? So let me start. In the 19th century, there's a rivalry between the Russian and the British Empire in Asia called the Great Game. This was centered on a British grand strategy to keep the Russian Empire weak to protect the British colony of India. Sir Halford Mackinder was the British geographer who is the father of geopolitics and modern strategy. Uh-huh. At the beginning of the 20th century, being British, he was focused on the strategy of the Great Game, of course. You always respond to your environment. So in 1904, Mackinder spoke at the Royal Geographical Society in London with his geopolitical theory in his book called The Geographical Pivot of History. He stated that a country or a coalition that marshaled the land power needed to control Eurasia would become a global menace, for it would then command the resources required to build sea power without rival. This is 1904, and this is the way Presidente Trump and his advisors think today, over 121 years later.
That's a good point. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay, so, of course, Mackinder was influenced by Alfred Thayer Mahan's book, The Influence of Sea Power Upon History, 1860-1783, published in 1890. Basically, he understood that it was navies that projected power, and that is how the Spanish, Portuguese, British, French, Dutch, and German navies colonized the world. Consequently, he thought that if Eurasia ever became united, it would rule the world because it would have the resources to build a giant navy. Okay, Hal Brands is a current American grand strategist and geopolitics expert. In his book, The Eurasian Century, Hot Wars, Cold Wars, and the Making of the Modern World, published this year in 2025, he boils down American grand strategy to a single sentence. Freedom can only flourish by keeping Eurasia divided. Okay, I want you to understand what he means by freedom. Freedom means that you have to live in a country where judges decide what the president can do, where there is no criminal justice or any kind of justice. Okay, where everything is arbitrary and capricious. And you're free to pretty much do exactly as you're told, and you're free to be gay, tranny, feminist, Marxist, decadent. You're free to do that, but you're not free to live a decent life and, you know, have the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You're not free to do that. Okay, his thing for freedom is what they try to sell you into thinking that you're free. Just try to be free, and you'll see what I mean, okay? You're not really free to be free, all right? So Hal Brand's grand strategy is based on Alfred Mackenzie's Heartland Theory. And this is important. Anybody who studies grand theory strategy will talk about the Heartland. In 1919, he published a book, Mackinder did, called Democratic Ideas in Reality, A Study in the Politics for Reconstruction. He wrote this after World War One, and this is Reconstruction of the World after World War One. We're talking about the globalists. This is the League of Nations, Wilson, the globalists, you know, the Rothschilds. This was their project. This book is the Bible, an accepted doctrine that all military and geopolitical strategists learn and follow. It has produced a cult-like stupor in our strategic thinkers that they cannot see beyond. His Heartland Theory was this, okay? Who rules East Europe commands the Heartland. Who rules the Heartland commands commands the world island. Who rules the world island commands the world. Let me explain these terms for you. Okay, so the heartland is Eurasia. The world island is Europe, Asia, and Africa. So so just keep in mind that what happened in 1991, before that, the Soviet Union, Russia had East Asia, Eastern Europe. Okay, and he's saying whoever controls Eastern Europe. So what NATO did is it snuck by and gobbled up Eastern Europe so that they could control Russia. Okay, so you understand this is their theory going back to the 1990s. We got to control Eastern Europe to control the heartland, Russia, Eurasia. We have to control Eastern Europe. So that's why even though we promised that these nations, that NATO wouldn't move an inch to the east, we in fact moved all the way to the border and took all the Eastern European countries. We took all of them, okay? And this was so that we could control Eurasia, okay? So this means that we can control Russia. So we have a total intent to attack and destroy Russia. This is part of the heartland strategy that we have been doing. We don't tell the public about this strategy, but we have been attacking Russia since 1991, since the Soviet Union fell.
Got it. Okay,
so if we look at the wars that have happened since 1904, they all had to do with keeping Eurasia divided. Because remember, if Eurasia is united, it's a threat to freedom. Okay. So World War One was an effort to break up Eastern Europe. Germany and Austria-Hungary, to keep them from controlling Eastern Europe. Germany and Austria-Hungary were Eastern Europe. Okay, they bordered Russia. This threatened Russia. If Germany and Austria-Hungary took Russia, they could take the world island and then the world. That's what their strategists were worried about. World War II was to keep Germany from controlling Eastern Europe and Russia. Once again, the same thing. If Germany controlled Eastern Europe and then Russia and Eurasia, they could control the world island and then the world. So then in the Cold War, the Soviet Union controlled Eastern Europe and Eurasia, so it threatened the world island and so the world. The 20th century wars were intended primarily to keep Eurasia divided. That's the Korean War, 1950-53, the Taiwan Straits, 57-58, the Vietnam War, 1945 to 1975, the India-Pakistan Wars, 1947-48, 1965, 1971, 1999, and 2025. Okay, so there are three major axes of U.S. effort to keep Eurasia divided. The first is China. Nixon's China policy was to exploit the Sino-Soviet split to keep Eurasia divided. Trump's strategy is to drive a wedge between China and Russia. He's going to do this through secondary sanctions by creating friction between India, Russia's ally, and Pakistan, China's ally, by arming and supporting Taiwan, by keeping South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific Islands hostile to China. Okay, the second axis is India, to keep India hostile to China and drive it away from the Russia. Using our proxy Pakistan to keep up terrorism on India to create instability and friction between India and China, and using secondary sanctions to wean India away from Russia. And then the third axis is Israel, to keep Russia's southern front perpetually destabilized and in turmoil to keep Russia out of the Middle East and Africa. Okay, so none of these are actually working.
Yeah.
None of them are actually working.
No, they don't seem to be at all.
This is the trouble they're trying to make. However, times and technology have changed since Mackinder created geopolitics. First, the fear that Eurasia would lead to the creation of a super navy that would conquer the world is not a technological reality for two reasons. First, Billy Mitchell's demonstration in the 1930s that air power had eclipsed naval power in both cost and effectiveness. A relatively cheap aircraft can defeat very expensive warships. This forced the hybrid Navy, where the aircraft carrier eclipsed the battleship. But now a hypersonic missile, which is cheaper than a fighter jet, has made the aircraft carrier obsolete, especially when paired with cheap drone technology, which can overwhelm fleet air defense systems.
All true. Unfortunately,
second, nuclear weapons can, of course, can destroy an entire fleet at once. Sea power is unnecessary for national defense if you are a nuclear-armed power, okay?
Right.
Second, nuclear weapons have changed the calculus of defense. Previously, in defense strategy, you had to have strategic depth. You had to control avenues of approach to your nation. You had to keep your enemies weak. This was the situation that Mackinder's grand strategy was dealing with. With nuclear weapons, strategic depth does not matter because you can destroy your enemy quickly if you are attacked. This is the logic of Israel having nuclear weapons. Israel has no strategic depth at all, either in space, time, or population. Nuclear weapons are Israel's real defense. They do not need more territory or to command avenues of approach or even weaken their enemies. Their lust for land is for selfish greed and not necessarily for defense. Israel is offensive in order to keep the Middle East and the Russia's southern front destabilized. It is aggression to keep Eurasia divided. The U.S. is far more complicit in Israeli war crimes than we would admit. In other words, a nation does not have to control its neighbors or try to keep its competitors weak in order to ensure national defense if it is nuclear-armed. A nuclear-armed power does not have to fight with anyone to ensure its own security. So times have really changed. You don't have to go on adventures. You don't have to conquer your neighboring nations anymore. You can leave them be, and you can still be secure in your defense. Third, nuclear weapons have made attacking another nation suicidal. What we have done is attempt to use asymmetrical, unconventional, terrorist, hybrid, and proxy warfare in an attempt to incrementally attack and destroy our designated enemies, risking humanity in an attempt to control the world. Mm-hmm. Russia, China, and Iran do not want to create a navy to project power and control the world. The United States is the only nation that has a navy that can project power, and it is the only nation that openly wants to rule and control the world. Only us. With our power, we want to impose a Marxist, sodomite, feminist, pedophile culture on all humanity at the tip of a bayonet. Just think, they are risking the lives of all who you love to create a woke, gay, tranny, homo, feminazi world where we can all live in a sodomite paradise. That is their goal.
Wow.
Okay? Make no
mistake. You're not off the mark
it.
Either. That's down the... No, that's about as blatantly accurate as you're going to get. That's the truth. Go ahead. Jeez.
So not just the technology has changed, but also the culture. While the West became Marxist and internationalist, the culture changed in Eurasia also. The Eurasian nations are not internationalists. They are nationalist cultures that just want their freedom as a culture. China wants to develop a thriving Chinese nation state that just includes Chinese. Yes, they want Taiwan, but the UN, as well as the USA, recognizes Taiwan as an integral part of China. So they just want what they already have. They want the United States out of their business. Russia wants to develop a thriving Russian nation state that just includes Russian territory. But they do not want to be surrounded by NATO nations that are overtly hostile to them. Iran wants to develop a thriving Iranian nation-state that just includes Iranian territory, but they don't want to be threatened, isolated, and bombed at random by Israel and the United States. Actually, India wants the same thing, as do all the other BRICS nations. They want freedom from the Marxist, sodomite, feminist West. They want us to mind our own business. They do not want to destroy us. They want to actually just do business with us. Okay, I want to remind people. I mean, as you live your daily life over here, you think you're a free person. You have all this liberty. Okay,
yeah.
I've actually gone to, I remember living in a dictatorship in Bolivia where I was as totally free as you can possibly be. And yet the world branded that Isaias Suazo, the government, was branded a dictatorship, but you were free to do as you want. I went to Chile, and in Chile, Pinochet was the dictator, iron thumb fascist dictator, right? But you could go about your business and do whatever you wanted to. I went down to a bar on the beach in the middle of the day, and the people were sitting around smoking pot. In Chile, in a dictatorship, and this is 1984, you couldn't do that in America, but you could do it in Chile. Under a dictator, you could do that. So you have to reevaluate. When I went to and worked in China, the Chinese people were happy and they were happy with their life. They want to be Chinese. They want to cooperate.
They have a culture to celebrate.
Chinese,
they're comfortable with it. As they say, they're comfortable with
their skin.
I'm
sure the Iranians are comfortable with their culture, as are the Russians, as are the everybody.
Of course.
Even, believe it or not, North Koreans. Most North Koreans are perfectly okay with the culture they live in.
That's true. Yeah.
So you see a big component, a major component of this is an economic war. Okay, so I want to throw a few figures out at you so you can kind of tell for yourself where this economic war is going, okay? So who do you think will win, BRICS or NATO? Let me break it down. So BRICS have now 75% of the world's minerals. NATO has 15%.
That's huge.
So
BRICS
has five times as much minerals as we do. BRICS has 45% of the world, and I'm just talking about BRICS. I'm not talking about the whole world, just actual BRICS countries. 45% of the world population. NATO has 7.4%. Once again, they have like five or six times more people than we have. Okay, BRICS has 51% of global iron production. We have 11%. So they have roughly five times as much iron production as we do. So that's making weapons of war. Okay. BRICS has 44% of the global petroleum reserves. NATO has 13.3%. So they have roughly four times as much petroleum reserves that we have.
Mm-hmm.
BRICS has 43.1% of global petroleum production. NATO has 26.6% of that production. So BRICS has twice as much petroleum production as we do. BRICS has 42% of global food production. NATO has 17%. So BRICS has about 2.5 times more food production than NATO does. BRICS has 40% of the world gross domestic product. We have 30%. Okay. BRICS has 34% of the world land area. In other words, inside BRICS is already one-third of the world's land area. NATO has 10% of the world's land area. So they have like one-tenth of the world, and BRICS has a third of the world. Okay. So this is what Trump is picking a war with. This is what he's picking a war with, okay? And he thinks that we have limitless economy, limitless money, limitless military power, and we just simply do not. I kind of saw this coming, Jeff, a long time. And by 2011, I made sure that all of my sons had military service. 2011 says you got to go in the military because, you know, you don't want to be in when the final war comes.
Very smart. No, you got them in and out.
So
they
went in 2011. They were out by 2019. Okay. They did their service. They cannot be drafted now. So, you know, that was a major thing that we wanted to accomplish.
They're drafting women in Ukraine. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah. So as we look, you can see this all going up. It's like, the United States has got, and Israel has Azerbaijan, ready to attack Iran in the northwest part of the country.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got this year in Armenia, they have American military contractors to control the causeway between Azerbaijan and their little province that's over nested in the mountains. Okay, they got, it's not American troops, it's American contractors. Okay, and you know they don't have to follow rules and stuff, so they're independent, so they don't have to listen to foreign policy or foreign policy considerations or anything. Like American contractors in the Gaza Strip delivering food and gunning people down. Okay, they're not obeying the laws of warfare.
Right.
So they just look at everything they're doing. It's just everywhere they're trying to create hatred and stir up trouble everywhere they go. Pakistan has always been from the beginning, has been our proxy. We have always based terrorist organizations there. The Pakistani ISA directs what terrorist attacks will occur in each country. Okay, a lot of the terrorist attacks that they planned were to kill the monkey to scare the chicken. Okay, just a demonstration, like the Twin Towers or some random attacks once in a while in France, just to keep the people feeling threatened. Okay, this is America. We do this. Okay, I want people to just consider this. Let's just go in the realm a little bit of mythology, of religion and theology, okay? Because this really motivates people, okay? Back in the day, the Rothschilds, they got their name because they had a red shield on their house. Instead of having numbers on houses, you had different shields with different colors, okay? In 1822, when Austria actually made the Rothschilds, you know, like royalty and stuff, whatever. They adopted what's now called the Star of David, but it was a red Star of David, okay? That was their shield.
Oh,
and Rothschild means red shield, okay? The Rothschilds, of course, created the
dynasty. Oh, it does.
Dynasty,
I've forgotten that. You're 100% right. Interesting. Red shield.
Yep.
There it is.
And that shield was the shield that they turned blue and made it the Zionist symbol, which is on the Israeli flag today. And listen, you know, when they say things in Revelation and stuff, they're really trying to point to things that are obvious, not things that are hidden. What good does it do to point to hidden things? They want to point to obvious things. And 666 is the number of the beast. And if you look at that Star of David, it's got 6 points, 6 triangles, and 6 inner angles. 666. It's smacking you in the face. If you go look at the things of Moloch, you'll see that same star on Moloch. And inside that star, you'll see the all-seeing eye represented there. If you look at the $1 bill on the back, there's an all-seeing eye on the top of the pyramid, but look at that cluster of stars above the eagle. If you outline that stars, it makes a Star of David also, if you superimpose that. When the Rothschilds made, the Rothschilds are very, I mean, listen, this is almost satanic. When they opened the diamond mines, the Oppenheimer diamond mines, in Kimberley, South Africa, the city center actually is a. You can look at this map. Look at Kimberley. You can see it on a map. There's a hexagram in there where you can superimpose a Star of David on that. And if you measure it from one side to the other, it's 666 meters across. Okay. So the Rothschilds themselves have been trying to tell you that they are the mark of the beast.
That's funny.
Okay, so they are the beast. Right?
They and their entire monetary system.
Right, right. And so always going back, let's keep things simple again. the definition of Antichrist in Scripture is always the same. It's he who denies that Jesus is the Christ is Antichrist. Okay, Israel denies that Jesus is the Christ. Okay, so Israel is Antichrist. It just is. Okay, and all those people, you know, listen. I see like on YouTube. I see this in the Young Turks. They have this woman called Anna Kasparian, and she's an atheist. Okay, and she gets on there and she calls out Israel for what they are: war criminals, genocidaires, ethnic cleansing, crimes against humanity. She calls them out for it, and she says how disgusted she is with it. She is an atheist. And I want you to pay attention that our Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, claims to be a devout Christian, as does Carolyn Leavitt, our press secretary, does our ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. What do these three people have in common? They worship Israel. Anna Kasparian is not a Christian. And she can see clearly the evil that Israel is, mm-hmm. and yet these Zionist Christians, they're worshiping Israel.
They're worshiping
the Antichrist.
It's
sort of like the what it is. They're worshiping the mark of the beast. They're worshiping the beast. They serve the beast. They lie for the beast. They misdirect for the beast. They feed the beast. They take your money to feed the beast. Okay, when you look at these things in Revelation, sometimes people just don't look at the obvious. Okay, and sometimes you have to use a little common sense to figure out what the things are. And we have seen now in America in the past 5 years, we have seen this thing. It talks in the last days about two witnesses, okay? And the two witnesses, when they describe these two witnesses, it describes them with certain powers. So one witness, as they're describing, has the power of Moses, and the other one has the power he's a guy who's always, it slips my mind every time I try to think of him. But he's a prophet, not a major guy, but he's a guy who really went out and attacked people for their prophecy. Okay, mm-hmm. So you see two things: one is prophecy, and one is law. Okay, so with the Biden administration, we saw the law there, because what we had is we had this sodomite, tranny, pedophile. A government that was imposing these things. Now to make it clear, 1 Corinthians 6 states very clearly that adulterers and homosexuals and trannies and stuff cannot go to heaven. Okay, so all these people that preach that they can, that God totally accepts this and blesses it, that is what the Moses witnesses is talking about. The other witness is talking about prophecy, and his prophecy thing is all those people who worship Israel and the Jews. He's trying to show that this is a false religion. So the Biden administration is the law thing, and the Trump administration is the prophet thing. Okay, where our prophecy is all wrong. The false church is this Christian Zionism is the false church of Revelation and stuff. They're so rabid. I have relatives that are Christian Zionists, and it doesn't matter if you can really be a sincere Christian, you can be a Christ obedient Christian, and they will say you're going to hell because you do not worship Israel.
Wow.
Okay, they are so totally
that's a bad club. That's a bad
brainwashed
club.
In this that it's just sort of like wow, you know.
And this is,
I even was saying about a year ago that these people will be the people who are going to be the persecutors of real Christians, because what they're going to do is they're going to put you in jail or have you executed basically for anti-Semitism. Will be the one crime
any criticism of Israel, Israeli policies, past, present, or potentials, is now considered to be the worst thing on the planet, an anti-Semitic remark. This is really crazy. The semantics of language and words have been completely corrupted and used against us. This is bad. It's not going to get better. It's going to be up to the people to stand up and say, hey, First Amendment, if I don't like something, I have a right to criticize it. Don't I?
Yeah.
And what will the Supreme Court say?
Well, you know, you don't. But we saw that under the Biden administration, that you don't have a right to criticize things that the government says you don't have a right to criticize. That's why they have the FBI.
That's not America, though. Of course, it has nothing to do with America.
Shutting down all these things, tweets and stuff like that, imposing censorship. I mean, so that's what I mean, is we think that we're free, but you're not really free. I mean, you know, if you look at the contract, the Bill of Rights, it says that your right to bear arms shall not be infringed.
Abridged.
That's very clear language. Okay, so
that's right.
So gun laws are all an infringement. They all are.
Every one of them is.
Yeah. And the right to free speech. Listen, they even managed, under the Biden administration, to outlaw and punish religious speech. In other words, your right to be gay was more important to your right to the freedom of religion. Religion wasn't important. Your right to be gay was more important. Okay. They were moving towards. I want you to, going back to this Star of David in Moloch. Moloch is very important in this, because a big thing about Moloch was the sacrifice of children. Okay, so you know, this is the, think about the world we live in now. We have in the church, we have all these pedophile priests sacrificing children's souls for the child molesting homosexuality of priests. We have politicians, Epstein files, politicians sacrificing children for sex so that they can blackmail people. You know, using children as honeypots. Okay, look at Hollywood and their sacrifice. And their child sexual molestation and stuff like that. It is rife in society, okay? It is like the acceptable thing. You know, these are minor attracted people, not pedophiles. You know, and somehow it's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to let Epstein's people all escape. These big, powerful men that screw little girls, they are protected by our government from being punished. Protected by our government, by our FBI, by our CIA. These people are protected from being punished for molesting little girls. Okay? And let me tell you something. When they go out and they molest these little kids, they're not stealing their lives from them, they're stealing their souls from them.
Okay?
And this is a very big thing for satanic people. They want to sacrifice the innocent, not the guilty. Think about what I just said. They want to sacrifice the innocent, not the guilty. Think about abortion versus death penalty. It's okay to abort innocent babies, but it's not okay to execute vicious murderers. Okay,
you turn them loose on the streets is what you do, especially if they're invaders. Turn them loose.
Oh, yeah. So listen, as to what's going to come up next, you know, the thing in Russia is going on. We're just going to keep pushing in Russia until we have a nuclear war. In the Middle East, The next step is Israel wants to go ahead. Israel has pretty much got carte blanche to ethnic cleanse the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. So what they're trying to do now is they're trying to make excuses for invading Syria, because they want to push to the Euphrates River in Syria, but they want to move all the Syrians out. Okay. they want to push all the Syrians out.
Yeah.
And they want to take all that land. So just think about it. If they take all of Syria up to the Euphrates, who has all the land on the other side of the Euphrates in Syria? The United States does. We control that, right?
Sickeningly true.
Yes. So eventually, you know, what Iran is doing now is they're getting ready for the big war. I mean, they know that it's going to happen. And they're not fooling around. They're spending their days and times getting their air defense systems up, getting their missiles ready to shoot. I mean, they've already probed the Israeli lands. They already know they can overwhelm their air defense systems, okay? And in the intervening time, they're not going to get enough air defense systems in there, because the United States doesn't have any anymore. I mean, we've spent most of our stuff, so... So that they're not going to have a chance to build that back up again. And Iran has only fired so far about 1% of its missiles. Only 1%.
I heard 4%, but whatever. It's quite small.
Yeah. I mean, it's insignificant and stuff. So the Iranians know to use a lot of drones and old stuff as chaff to attract the air defense systems, and then send their hypersonics in to actually hit important targets and stuff. So I think there will come a time when Tel Aviv will look like Gaza looks today. Okay, that's very possible that we're going to see that. Okay, so I want Christian Zionists out there to wake up and understand that in the same verse, 1 John 2:22-23. It says, if you do not have the Son, you do not have the Father. God is not protecting Israel. God is not on Israel's side. They're going to be destroyed. Okay? They're going to be wiped out.
Seems like that's a very reasonable probability at this point. I still can't imagine I would live to see a world like this that is so afraid of Israel because of the Samson option, that they will not step in and stop the genocide and the starvation. It boggles the mind. Think about it.
No,
that's absurd.
No,
this is 2025, not 1425.
Is going to happen. I mean, you know, how do you explain? See, if you try to explain World War in normal terms, it's the global north that would be wiped out. So how does this affect the global south? Well, because Israel's going to bring the global south down. They're going to bomb Bogota, Brasilia, Sao Paulo, Buenos Aires, Nairobi, Johannesburg. You know, they're going to take out all these cities. Israel's sanction option doesn't mean that they're going to destroy the Arab countries. It means they're going to take humanity with them. They are so evil that if they don't get what they want, they're going to destroy all of humanity. Okay, they want to kill everybody. Okay, so people should wake up and realize this. You know, and let me tell you something. None of this could happen without the United States of America and President Donald J. Trump. None of it could happen without them.
Have you ever seen a more really disgusting man in the White House? Biden, he's brain dead. Trump is not brain dead. He's just disgusting.
Horrible.
He's gotten fatter again. He looks terrible. Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw Conor McGregor today talking, and he said that Trump is basically doing everything Biden did. There's no difference between Biden and Trump now.
Well,
so,
McGregor's basically correct. There's no. because they're being run by the same power matrix. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's exactly what McGregor says, is it's the same people running both camps.
Right, of course.
It's the same people running the show and everything. So, you know, it's just that I implore people that you know, you got to get yourself ready. I'm already buying canned foods and stocking up on them stuff. I did it before, but right now is the time. I mean, I'm making a concerted effort to daily to stock up on as much stuff as I can, you know, because it's coming, you know. So get my book, The Final Wars, How to Survive the Coming Civil War, World War III and the Collapse of Civilization, because that's what's going to happen, is the collapse of civilization. We're not talking about a temporary period of time and then everything will get back to normal. No, it won't. It's over. Civilization will be over. You have to prepare for it. In my book, The Final Wars, available on Amazon, I tell you what you need, the tools you need for your vehicle go bag, your personal go bag, what you need to do when things happen and stuff. And up until that moment, you have to realize that the economy is going to tank before any of that happens. So the things you need to get, you need to get now. Now, World War III started on June 22nd. It's already began, okay? The big fighting and stuff maybe has not shown up, but look at World War II. It began in 1939, and 5 long years went by, and it was the last year of the war that all the death and destruction came. So there was what came before that death and destruction? What came in America? America wasn't even fighting, but you know what? I got these things from my mom that was alive during World War II, ration stamps and stuff. You didn't just go buy some sugar at the store. You had to have a ration stamp.
You have some of those World War II ration stamps? That's interesting.
Yes, yeah, I still have some
nice piece of history.
Left and stuff. Yeah, nice piece. But that's what you had ration stamps for gasoline.
Yeah, okay? I remember hearing about
and
this.
And everything, okay? So everything was rationed. You just couldn't, in World War II in America, where there was no bombing or fighting, you could not just go down to the store and buy what you wanted. Okay, you were rationed stuff. So you can, you know, this time war will come to the homeland, but before it comes, things are going to be rationed and stuff. I mean, I'm even buying toilet paper. One of the things that just blew my mind was how in the COVID pandemic, how toilet paper disappeared. It's like, why toilet paper? It was a respiratory disease. If it was a diarrhea disease, I could understand, but it was a respiratory disease. And
got it.
The toilet paper disappeared. So think about that. Things that you commonly use and stuff, you need to get it. You need to get information, too. That's why I say my book, The Final Wars. That's why I suggest if you look down there, there's the prepare tab, and that thing has got all kinds of information about everything that you're going to need, and that will survive what's happening. It's portable; you can carry it with you, you know. So, and you can use it for entertainment too at the end of the world. So, you know,
entertainment. Nah, your book is just a great read. Period. It's just it's quite a tour de force. It tells it all. You've got it all there, predicated on a lifetime of military perspective, actual hard, hands-on experience, wet works, being a cop. What more could you ask for? How all these people writing books have no background like Mitch's. Not even 1/20th of it. So there you go. It's a great book, and it's a must book. It's the Bible of survival. The Final Wars. Amazon. Get it.
I like that. The Bible of Survival. It's got a ring to it.
Yep. Well, the truth will set you free, but the truth will save your ass too. All right? And that's what's in the book. The truth about how to prepare and how to dodge hopefully, an early death. It's going to get real ugly out there. It already is, but
it'd be very hard. You know, I need to bring this up again because, you know, we keep talking about, well, we have the best army in the world. I look at these army videos and stuff, and I just have to comment.
We no longer have the best army in the world.
We are not going to win the next war, okay?
No.
I want you to look at these videos. I want you to look at the people in these videos. Look at the people in our military.
Look at the way the Chinese march. Look at the North Koreans march. You think that kind of discipline is going to be evidenced here?
Yeah.
You're not going to see that here.
No. Not only that, but let me just bring something up about combat that I think escapes a lot of people. Okay, the reason why that you want really physically fit people to go into combat is because combat is grueling hard work. It is extremely exhausting, very, very hard on every level, psychologically,
sure.
Physically.
Sure.
It is super hard work. You'll never work harder than when you're in combat. When you're in actual combat, it's just unbearable work. And what you do is you go beyond what you can do because you're fighting for your life. Okay,
yes.
And that's why it's hard work. So when you see these. You see our soldiers and stuff going in. I hate to say even our Marines. When you see them getting ready to go, oh, one out of four of them is a girl now. When you see these people go to war, you know,
we're 25%, Mitch, 25% of U.S. Marines are women?
No, not the Marines. Yeah. The whole service.
Okay.
For example, the Air Force has more women, and the Marines have the least women, but there's still a lot of female Marines. Now.
It is said, though, that in military, is it not for every man or frontline warrior, there are nine behind him or her who are doing the paperwork and the administrative stuff and all the rest of it that goes to keeping an army somehow functional.
Yeah,
it's 9-1.
For every infantryman.
7-1?
7-1. 7-1. Okay, but listen, now we have the rear battle, so just because you're, there is no more in the rear with the beer. If you're in the military now, you're going to be exposed to combat. You know, there won't be a front line anymore, okay? Look at drones, look at nuclear weapons, look at drones, look at air power, there won't be, the days of the front line, what they call the flot or the forward line of troops, those days are kind of slipping by. I mean, we didn't have that in the past 25 years of our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. There was no forward line of troops. This is why you had a lot of women getting Silver Stars because their convoys got ambushed and stuff. Okay, I mean. You know, listen, it's not a male or a female. Bravery isn't a male or a female thing. It's a very individual thing. Some people just step up and shine, okay? But then you can't in peacetime tell who those people are. Not even the military can tell who they are. I remember some of the bravest men I ever saw were in peacetime, they were the biggest F-ups that we had in the unit. Okay,
yeah.
But then when the battle came, they stepped up and they shone. Okay, they were good and stuff. So you can't. This is something you can't tell. You can't measure it until it happens and stuff.
Got it.
You know, I've seen this time and time again over my life. I've seen people that I didn't think there was anything. I wouldn't think that they would be the person who stood up and would stand out and be just totally brave and courageous and stuff, but they were, you know, they weren't the people I expected. And some of the people who looked like they were the movie star, big, brave, tough guys and stuff, they were total cowards and ran, you know, so you just can't tell until it happens.
Wow. All right, my friend, that was quite an output, a lot of material there. Very important. And I do hope that all of you remember that all of Mitch's appearances are on the left side of the homepage under his name. You can go listen to them at any time. Share them, please. And don't forget about the book, The Final Wars, Amazon. All right, my friend. Anything to add here?
Nope. We'll see you next week and go get some canned foods, go get some freeze-dried foods, some stuff.
I'm getting ready.
Start getting ready, you know?
Thanks, Mitch. All righty. Okay. Good night, my friend. Good night.
Okay, good night.
All right. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, we'll be back, and lots to talk about tomorrow as well. Every day is a full, what is it, seven-course meal? Something like that. There's so much going on, and certainly characterizing most of it is lies. Lies. Everywhere. Nonstop. See you tomorrow. Take care.